Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And it's a pleasure to be here in the studio with you this week, Ken.
Right. And before we go on the podcast, I'd just like to play a little piece of tape I have of Clarence Thomas during the proceedings.
Yes, that was Clarence Thomas, a Supreme Court Justice, during the 3 days of consideration of the health care law by the Supreme Court. Which of the 3 days did we get that tape from?
I think we've got it since 1991. It's accumulation of since 1991.
They call him
Silent Justice.
Yeah. So there is no more Rick Santorum.
Well, No.
Wisconsin is coming up, and Wisconsin...
You give him much more chances in Wisconsin than anybody else.
I did at one time.
Yes, that was 1993.
The polls have turned against him. So the big problem for Rick Santorum now is that he's running out of states. Wisconsin is pretty much the last of the Great Lakes states, other than Pennsylvania, his own home state, that still has to vote.
Three weeks later,
coming back to the present... Even now in Pennsylvania, his big 20-point lead seems to have gone poof.
Yeah, which is interesting because we saw that with Romney for the longest time in the early going.
Big leads disappeared.
Yeah. Now, so we have Tuesday coming up. We have Maryland, D.C., and Wisconsin. So if he doesn't win Wisconsin, then we have nothing until April 24th, which is New York, Pennsylvania, and all the New England, a lot of the New England states.
All of which are going to go for Romney, except possibly Pennsylvania, which Western Pennsylvania at least feels some sense of loyalty to the native son, Rick Santorum.
There's another favorite son running in that Pennsylvania primary as well. Newt Gingrich, born in Harrisburg.
Oh, that's correct. Yes. I had forgotten that. But while you bring up Newt Gingrich, we seem to have moved into another phase. So, okay, there's anger, denial, bargaining. Is this acceptance on his part that he is not going to continue to mount the furious on-the-ground effort?
The furious
on-the-ground campaign that he had been running in, nowhere really. But now he's not going to do that anymore. He's going to, kind of look ahead.
I think when you lose 34 out of 36 contests, money doesn't come in. There's no way to pay. What's the face?
The face is money. What does money mean to Newt Gingrich? When he was in the money, when he had the Adelsons giving him money, Sheldon and Miriam, he was not much to be seen on television. Yeah. He didn't seem to make use
but
of that
money. But
that
was different money.
He seemed to be frittering.
Adelson money going to the super PAC is different, as you know, to the Gingrich campaign.
Oh, yes, of course. They could never be coordinated.
But it wouldn't put Gingrich on the air. Meanwhile, Adelson said...
No, but they could be doing ads not of Gingrich,
right,
but rather... going after the other candidates in a way that it was effective to help Gingrich. And we never really saw that Adelson money have that effect.
$16 million? $15.6 million?
$16 million is the figure between the two, Sheldon and Miriam. I don't know if they've discussed this. But.
Well, he now said that I'm cutting off a Newt's allowance is being cut off. He says he's reached his limit. And Gingrich has now cut off a third of his staff. He's cut back on his travels. And he says now he's hoping to win the nomination maybe in October.
He's hoping to win the nomination in August.
No. Forget about that.
No, at the Tampa convention where he says he's going to push for a big choice convention.
Because he's always been pro-choice.
Yes. And so let's say that we get to Tampa and the big choice convention decides to choose the guy who finished third. That would be an unusual convention. We've heard of open conventions. We've heard of brokered conventions.
Never insane.
This would be
convention.
A drunk convention. What in the world is he still up to?
I don't understand it. I mean, look, we had Chip Salzman on Talk of the Nation this week. He was the campaign manager for Mike Huckabee. Mike Huckabee said, look, I'm going to do the best I can. If I'm not going to win, I'm not going to get the nomination. I'm out. I'm fine about it.
Yeah. There's no negotiating here for vice president. Right. Newt knows he's not going to be the vice presidential nominee. But maybe Rick Santorum could cut some kind of a deal if he were to say to Mitt Romney at some point or another, okay, you don't want to have to go on contesting these remaining states even as much as you have to now. You can save a lot of money, concentrate on Barack Obama, turn that corner, look to the fall campaign. Let's make a deal. You make me vice president. What do you say?
Well, stranger things have happened. Kennedy and Johnson, Kerry and Edwards, Reagan and Bush.
But first Gore and Lieberman.
Well, they didn't run against each other in the primaries. Although Santorum said this week, right after a sentence or two of trashing Mitt Romney, he said, but you know something? I would accept the vice presidential nomination if I was offered.
He is the worst candidate the Republicans could possibly put up against Barack Obama on health care.
That's what
Rick Santorum said.
No, he didn't say
on health care. Oh, he didn't say
What he said was Mitt Romney is the worst candidate the Republicans could put up. And when Jeff Zeleny of the New York Times said, wait a second, you said this, and he said, that's BS, man. I didn't say that.
That's right. You're harassing me.
Yeah, right. You're I mean, that's what he's always been saying.
Can I just say, I mean, you know, obviously, I'm a journalist. I'm with the journalist who's asking the harassing question. But I can sort of see how, given the last couple of weeks, everything that's happened to Rick Santorum, and, of course, being called on some of the things he's said, which are over the line and over the top and, you know, over the moon. He kind of lost it there a little bit with Jeff Zeleny because he just was tired of having his own words thrown back in his face.
Yes, but he's also fundraising on this as well. He's now saying that I stood up to the New York Times. Sarah Palin congratulated him for standing up to the media. Look, it has something to do with ideology. Mike Huckabee was very, very conservative, is very, very conservative, but he never alienated the media the way Rick Santorum seems to, and Newt Gingrich too, seem to enjoy doing it.
But Mike Huckabee always saw his bread buttered on the other side. He saw that the media liked him, and we did. We were very kind to him. We thought he was kind of authentic in the Iowa caucus period, late 2007. Walking around, you know, in Des Moines, you could run into the guy all by himself, right. No entourage, find him on an elevator. In fact, I oftentimes wondered why he was just going up and down in elevators by himself.
Well, it was Romney's car elevator.
That's what you call a segue to a present controversy. Let's forget about 4 years ago and your recollections, Ron. Let's talk about now. Let's talk about what's going on with Mitt Romney's La Jolla home. Is there going to be room for all four cars? And are half of them Cadillacs?
I mean, there are people starving in Fort Lee, New Jersey, and we're talking about and we're talking about cars and Etch-a-Sketches.
It's non-issues, and we prefer non-issues because the issues are too heavy.
No, I don't want to diminish what you said. What you said is very important, but it is, in a sense, completely irrelevant to what people focus on during this crazy part of the campaign.
Well, all right. So we know that Mitt Romney now has, in addition to these primaries, that he has won, and the survival, apparently, of the Rick Santorum challenge, which winds up being concentrated primarily in the South and a couple of Rocky Mountain states, upper Midwest states. He's gotten the endorsement of George H.W. Bush. Now, that's not a huge shock.
Bush said several months ago that he will vote for him, but this was official this week.
That's right. And he also got this week, officially, the endorsement of Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida.
Followed by a week of endorsement from Jeb Bush.
There you go. So we do seem to be collecting not only the past of the party, but the future of the party in Marco Rubio and somebody who obviously might happen to be on Mitt Romney's short list of vice presidential nominees.
And the highlight was Jay Leno asking Mitt Romney to discuss potential running mates and to get a one-word or two-word reaction from Romney on them.
Chris Christie.
Oh, okay. Indomitable.
Indomitable.
Yeah.
Marco Rubio.
I'll try for smaller words next
Marco
time.
Rubio. Yeah. Yeah. Marco Rubio.
Good man. The American Dream.
Okay, that's three words.
I know, three words. All right. American Dream.
American Dream.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Donald Trump.
Huge.
Huge. Rick Santorum.
Press Secretary.
Press Secretary.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, there's the list.
Yeah. Well, all right. I don't really think that's the list.
But we are talking about running mates, and I guess it is time to talk about running mates, because unless he wants to do what John McCain did and vet his running mate in November of 2008.
Or in the cab on the way over to the announcement.
That's what exactly was.
Look, I think that Mitt Romney is a much more systematic kind of guy than John McCain, for better or for worse. And he will do a much more thorough job of knowing who his vice presidential nominee is. And if Marco Rubio can survive the scrubbing that he's probably going to get from Mitt Romney's lawyers over the next several months. But he would seem to be the person who got you Florida and the person who got you a better showing among Hispanics nationwide.
If nothing else, it's fair to say that I think almost everybody in the party except Rick Santorum, Newt Gingrich, and Ron Paul know that Mitt Romney is going to be the nominee. Democrats have known it for months. Now the Republicans are finally coming around to it.
Speaking of the Democrats, their candidate for president, who sometimes kind of goes in and out of the news nowadays, President Obama, was in Seoul, South Korea, for a nuclear proliferation summit. And at one point, while he was talking to the Russian leader, his microphone was on, and while he was saying, look, I need a little flexibility on this issue after my election in November, then I can maneuver. I can do whatever I want, essentially. And that was picked up and, of course, widely heard. And Republicans had a field day with it and will continue to have a field day with it. Mitt Romney pounced on it. Karl Rove says we're going to hear it all fall long. Are American voters going to think the president was betraying America with that remark?
Look, it's fair play, just as Etch-a-Sketch is a fair play, just as any gaffe is fair play. Now, what President Obama said is correct. Nothing is going to happen in Congress this year between March and November as far as nuclear proliferation or anything like that. But the fact that he asked for flexibility, the fact that he basically said, after my election, there'll be some flexibility, Republicans said, well, wait a second. You know, he's talking about a very serious issue, and maybe he's not being honest with the American people that he has some plan, just like he said in the past, that we can't have tax increases until 2013. He keeps talking about how he's going to make all these changes after he gets reelected, and the Republicans took it and said, wait a second, this guy has some sellout plan up his sleeve, and as John McCain said, he's talking about American security as an election ploy.
Yes, and he looks like he's sitting on the Russians' lap. Also, difficulty for the president in some respects is the ongoing controversy and racial divisiveness of the Trayvon Martin shooting case in Florida, where this young man was apparently shot by a neighborhood watch person who had self-appointed himself to run down anyone he thought was suspicious, and that apparently included anybody who was African-American and wearing a hoodie. And we've all heard a lot of accounts of this story now, and it appears that this is going to have long-term staying power, that it's going to be an issue not only in Sanford, Florida and thereabouts, but that it's going to be increasingly part or a sustained part of our national political conversation. Is that uncomfortable for the president as we head into the fall campaign?
Well, it should be uncomfortable for everybody, and it doesn't necessarily have to start off as a political issue, but of course, once President Obama weighs into it, then the Republicans say, well, this is political. Republican candidates like Rick Santorum, Newt Gingrich, talked about whether the president was appropriate in his response.
My main message is to the parents of Trayvon Martin. You know, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon.
It's clear the president has been not a uniting figure on an issue that I think many Americans thought he would be a uniting figure. And it's very tragic.
I object to personalizing in a way. Any young American who gets killed is a tragedy of any ethnic background for any reason.
And they had this very fascinating situation on the House floor this week where Bobby Rush, Democrat from Chicago, takes off his suit jacket and underneath is wearing a sweatshirt, puts on the hood, as in hoodie, puts on sunglasses, and basically is in solidarity with Trayvon Martin. And the whole week it became a political issue.
Just because someone wears a hoodie does not make them a hooligan. In the book of Micah 6:6-8,
the member will suspend.
These words.
The member will
these
suspend.
Words. He the has member, shown you, oh man.
The member will
what is
suspend.
Good,
the chair must remind
what does
members
not,
of
what does the Lord require of you, but to do justly. May God
the
bless Trayvon
no
Martin's
recognized.
Soul, his family.
The member is no longer recognized.
And what made that last scene so controversial, of course, there's a House rule that says you're not allowed to wear hats.
And kind of a hood counts as a hat.
So a hood counts as a hat. Remember when Bella Abzug was first elected to Congress in 1970, she talked about coming on the floor with a hat, and she gave the doorkeeper, somebody, a piece of her mind, but she didn't wear a hat. But somehow Bobby Rush, wearing a hood, became a hat.
That's the hood, the sunglasses, and then that member of Congress who is presiding, the Republican Greg Harper of Mississippi, he's gaveling down Bobby Rush. And what does he say as Bobby Rush stands there with the hoodie up over his head and the sunglasses on? The member is no longer recognized. I no longer see
he's
you.
He's escorted.
I can't see you.
He's escorted.
And they escorted
outside,
him
yeah.
off the floor. Right. I mean, this could have been just a moment that scarcely anyone paid any attention to if they had just let it go. But, of course, they gaveled him down. They removed him from the floor. And he was in violation of the House rules. But by doing those things, they gave this particular YouTube video weeks of legs.
I'm not sure if at the outset of this tragedy it was necessarily a race issue, but it's become one. It's become just as Reverend Wright was a racial conversation we had in 2008 during the 2008 campaign. Trayvon Martin has become a racial conversation we're having in 2012. And again, whether President Obama liked it or not, whether with anybody liked it or not, that's what it's become.
The other enormous political discussion we alluded to earlier in the podcast. In Washington this week, the Supreme Court had 3 days of hearings on the health care law, Obamacare, the 2010 law that is in the process over a series of years of transforming the American health insurance system and other aspects of the health care system. That law may have had its day in a very short period of time because the Supreme Court showed a lot of hostility to it this week, particularly the individual mandate that makes people buy insurance if they don't already have health care insurance from their employer or some other source. And that, of course, is what enables the insurance companies to then provide insurance to people who have previously been considered uninsurable, people with previous pre-existing conditions and so on. So this is a key linchpin in the law. It seemed to be disapproved by several of the justices enough to vote it down. So there is that possibility that we will have an enormous, enormous rock dropped in the pond of the presidential election somewhere around June when the justices throw out the entire health care law. And then what happens?
Well, I think we're jumping a little bit too fast. So first of all, though, for those of us who are keeping score at home, we think that the four so-called liberals on the court will certainly vote to keep the health care bill.
The four Democratic appointees.
Right. We do know that some conservatives on the court, such as Alito, Scalia, Thomas, are more than likely ready to get rid of the law. There's a lot of attention on the questions that were asked this week by both Chief Justice John Roberts and the so-called swing vote, Anthony Kennedy. Now, we've seen in the past where a justice can ask very hostile-sounding questions.
Tough questions.
Tough questions, and still vote for it. You don't know exactly, just by listening to the questions, what the justices will do. But the point is, you're absolutely right. Somehow there's going to be a decision, and it may very well be a political decision, unlike 7-2 or 8-1. This could very well be a 5-4 so-called political decision because the liberals on one side and the conservatives on the other side. The question now becomes, or at least the question in the fall becomes, if the health care law is taken down or if it's retained, who benefits?
Well, one thought is that it's called Obamacare. The president's name is stuck on it. And if it gets struck down, that's a blow to the president's prestige. It's a blow to the accomplishments of his administration. It would be a bad thing for Democrats. But then the countervailing thought is Democrats should be outraged and they should be mad at the court. And they should be ready to mobilize and give more money and vote more often and turnout is a big question in this election. And enthusiasm is a huge factor in this election. So it could help them if their health care law is thrown out. And on the other hand, it could energize Republicans if it's upheld.
Exactly. If it's upheld, then the Republicans have this big argument, as hostile as they've been since 2010 on this law, that they could be certainly more energized, saying, well, the only way we're going to get rid of Obamacare is to get rid of Obama. Whereas if they get rid of the law, the theory goes, maybe the conservatives are mollified. Okay, we won, and the pressure is off them. The first thing you said is what I think is the case, too. If Obama's signature accomplishment in his 4 years is the health care bill, and it's ruled unconstitutional, Barack Obama, the constitutional lawyer from Chicago, takes a big blow, and I think that definitely hurts him.
But does it hurt him among those independent swing voters who are the crux of this election? Or does it primarily hurt him with people who have no intention of voting for him?
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, I don't think anybody's mind will be changed no matter what the Supreme Court does. But I suspect if it's retained, it energizes the opponents of health care. If it's overturned, it will energize the proponents of health care.
And that's what we call irony. And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.